So,
what's trending?
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
I hope you have some great weekend plans ahead because it's Friday. That means we've had an action-packed week here on Trending. Be sure to follow the podcast by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending where you can subscribe so that you don't have to miss a single episode from this week. Coming up today, we will talk about yoga. Why not yoga? We hear a lot about cultural appropriation. What about religious appropriation? Do you perhaps do this where you subscribe in part to Catholicism and in part to other religions and movements, including the modern ideology of relativism? What are you missing out on? We'll dive into the Catholic virtues that will radically transform your faith journey if you only knew what they were. So stay tuned, buckle up. One of the topics we'll also cover is this phenomenal mind. Now, she's a self-proclaimed lesbian and feminist. Her name's Camille Paglia, and if you've not heard any of her lectures before, this woman has a brilliant mind, and she talks in a recent lecture I was watching about how we should regard men with a mixture of gratitude and rational fear. And she goes through and criticizes this attitude of toxic masculinity and this criticism of men and how it's hurting both men and women. It's a fascinating conversation. I can't wait to share it with you. So stay tuned. If you have a question during the show, you can always give us a call at 1-888-914-9149 or reach out on my Instagram. You can find me by heading over to relevantradio.com/trending where you can subscribe there to my Instagram page. I would love to hear from you. I've received this question over the past week, and it's a common question people have. If abortion is going to be legal, shouldn't we want it to be safe, legal, and rare? Just like the pro-abortion movement touts that they support abortion as safe, legal, and rare. It's fascinating to me because we don't hear these three words as often as we used to. Since the beginning of 2019, many abortion advocates have been calling for abortion with absolute unfettered access. And they've been using less of this language with regard to safe, legal, and rare. Yet, it's been effective language. In fact, someone reached out to me recently who said, do pro-life Catholics want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare? Because for some reason, looking at this, she thought, you know, Catholics do want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. But actually, that's not the case. Under no circumstance can a Catholic support, advocate, or make exceptions for abortion. Abortion should be illegal in all instances. And I'm going to explain to you why this isn't a harsh outlook for women, children, families, or society. First, we have to recognize that abortion should be illegal in all instances, number one, because its impact on the child. The moment we start to talk about so-called reproductive rights, we're talking about the rights of two human beings, the mother and the child, possibly even three if she's pregnant with twins. We're talking about distinct persons. Sure, each person may be in a different stage and development of life and facing a different degree of dependency on others, but even then, they're distinct persons. So any conversation about bodily autonomy goes out the door. Second, we advocate for no abortion in any circumstances because abortion hurts women. There is a tremendous impact on the woman who both chooses to have an abortion, is coerced into an abortion, and women who feel as if they have no other option but to have an abortion and perhaps didn't want it. All three of these women face what's referred to as post-abortion syndrome. I know someone dear to me in my life who right now, toward the end of their own life, is facing these challenges. I know many people who at the end of their life, you can talk to psychologists and therapists, how they talk about how often the pains of abortion are one of the most common topics that come up among women on their deathbeds. In those therapy sessions, the pain is so real. Sometimes it's after years of suppressing what actually happened in abortion. Others, it's been a symptom that's been there for years, whether it's led to difficulty bonding with certain children. Perhaps it's led to an overindulgence of a child right after that abortion. They're sometimes referred to as rainbow children, where the child's extra, extra loved after the abortion or after a miscarriage. In fact, there's a tremendous harm done even in terms of substance abuse for women who have had an abortion. Increased risk use of alcohol, drugs. I'm including marijuana in that. We still need to talk about marijuana here on Trending. Some of your questions about marijuana, because we need to talk about this. There's an increase in anxiety, depression, and a very high suicide rate, attempted suicide rate as well, among women who have had abortions. In fact, just a couple of months ago, I was talking to someone I knew who kept looking at me emphatically saying, why is it that more people don't talk about how suicidal women are after an abortion? Because we don't connect the abortion with the suicide. That's why. And even the woman herself is trying to suppress the abortion because she doesn't want to face it. We haven't even touched on the physical damage done to many women who have abortions. Some whose reproductive tracts have been damaged by the abortion itself and the scar tissue. Some women who have even had sexually transmitted diseases and did not receive proper screening before inserting instruments that would draw that sexually transmitted disease further up the reproductive tract, making it more damaging, more risky for life, and even prevent them from having children in the future. We could go on to any number of other complications, both physically, emotionally, and psychologically, that abortion brings about. But why is it that we don't want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare? Number one, even say there were some restrictions placed on abortion that were upheld, it's just not been the case. In fact, most abortion clinics in the United States do not even meet basic medical health standards. Texas is just one of the states where they've thrown outright medical restrictions out the door only for the medical practices where abortions are being performed. This is an injustice to women, and it's not making abortion safe. We're talking about unsanitary circumstances. We're talking about the fact that ambulance gurney couldn't even fit through the hallways to move a hemorrhaging woman, because women who have abortions do have complications. You couldn't even move a woman on a gurney through the hallway out of the abortion clinic into the ambulance. Many abortion clinics don't even have admitting privileges to a local hospital. That means where they have an agreement with a hospital that if something goes wrong, we're going to connect and work directly with this hospital and quickly get that woman in to get the care she needs, because guess what? The abortion facility does not have what it needs. So again, we are not holding abortion clinics to a standard of safety, even when laws and pro-life advocates try to push for this safety. We do not support abortion being legal because, A, it's wrong for the baby and the child and the greater society, the family. But also, when we make something legal that is wrong, we tell the world that it is moral. Just because something is a law doesn't make it right. So there are major conscience problems. In fact, we have whole generations of people who think that abortion is okay because it's legal. They think it's moral because it's legal, and that's just not true. When the day comes that abortion is made illegal here in the United States, we'll have years of work to do to help rewrite the mind's attitude with regard to abortion, to help people see that it was never moral to begin with. It shouldn't have even been conscionable. And then third, why don't we advocate for abortion to just be rare? Keep them safe, keep them legal, just keep them rare. Are you saying we should make exceptions for abortion? There's no reasonable reason to make an abortion exception. Even the majority of obstetricians and gynecologists both do not perform abortions and most don't even support abortion. Why? These are doctors caring for women in their bodies because it's not medically necessary to have an abortion. Perhaps an early delivery might be recommended, but that's not the intentional killing of a baby through abortion. That's very different. Perhaps a woman may choose to forego a certain type of, let's say, cancer treatment, chemotherapy or something, because it could endanger her child. That could be her heroic decision, but she could also choose to go through with various cancer treatments that could put her child at risk. That's a secondary cause. The initial intention is to treat the woman for cancer, not to impact the child. You see the difference there? The intention is real. Why would we go in and intentionally kill a baby? So again, there should be no exception. And I'm going to use that typical argument that everyone talks about, because one of the questions brought up to me, but do Catholics want abortion to be illegal, no matter the negative effects? The negative effects are when abortion is illegal. Let's use the most common negative effect argument that we hear. The impact abortion will have not having access to abortion when a woman's been raped. Did you know that women who have been raped, when they end up having an abortion, are not able to go through the healing process properly because they identify more with the person who harmed them, with the perpetrator, with the rapist, than they do with being a victim, because they begin to identify as having done something horrible to an innocent human being, just like the rapist did something horrible to them who was an innocent human being. So it actually stymies, it stunts, it damages that healing process for the woman because she cannot identify as a victim as she ought to be able to. And then second, we have to recognize that not even the rapist receives the death penalty. Why should the innocent bystander of the baby be given the death penalty? And then people will say, well, let's say there are other negative consequences of not having access to abortion. For example, women's education and careers could legitimately be disrupted and delayed. Don't take this lie. I know many women, and myself included, who have an undergraduate degree, a graduate degree, and I'm working in my field of choice that also matches what I studied, and I didn't need abortion. Women do not need abortion to be educated or to work. The bottom line is that abortion hurts women, and women deserve better than the lie of abortion. So no, we do not support abortion in any instance. We do not support the lie that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. That's used as an excuse to try and keep abortion legal, making it sound nice and all about access. But that's not what the pro-abortion movement stands for, because they erase and throw out laws and fight against any law that would try to keep abortion a little safer for women, if we could even call it that, a little more rare for women. And in fact, they want it legal in all circumstances. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. It's our responsibility as Catholics, yours and mine, to be involved in the culture and the governance of our nation and communities. Our church, family, and the most vulnerable members of society depend on us. Father Rocky's new ebook, Vote Your Conscience, will help you learn how to form your conscience around truth, beauty, goodness, and Catholic teaching, and then to use your well-formed conscience in all areas of your life to make moral choices in voting, raising your family, and evangelizing those around you. Father Rocky's ebook is free. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com/vote or sign up on the Relevant Radio app. After you download your copy of Vote Your Conscience, invite your family and friends to sign up for their own copy. This knowledge is meant to be shared. So get your free ebook by heading over to relevantradio.com/vote or sign up now on the Relevant Radio app. I listened to this fascinating lecture by Camille Paglia. Now, if you don't know who she is, I grew up listening to her. She would sometimes join Dennis Prager and other minds talking about cultural issues. Now, she is a professor of humanities at the university level. She works with media studies as well, and she works at the University of Arts in Philadelphia. Now, she was speaking at Lafayette College during this lecture I was listening to, and this woman is a self-proclaimed lesbian feminist, yet she's starting to ditch many of the modern-day feminist ideologies. Paglia does not see a culture in the same terms as feminists who are in favor of gender neutrality. She opposes the claim of gender studies that views the world in terms of constant male oppression and female victimage. She speaks of this anti-male bias in the culture that obsesses over a few things: sexual violence, abortion, and that men are just predators. Paglia has a real problem with this idea of toxic masculinity. She says masculinity, through this definition of toxic masculinity, says that masculinity at its core is bad. And she asks this question: what does this do to the stable male identity? She said this is evil and unclear thinking. You see, what we're teaching today is that it's bad to be a man. Is there any surprise that we have this gender ideology push that is confusing so many people? In fact, to the point where more people than ever before are claiming that they're a gender other than what they really are. And not only that, people aren't happier when they suddenly decide to transition or identify as something else. The problem is very clear that in society we see examples of this. The American Psychological Association in 2019 ended up pushing this idea of toxic masculinity and that to be a man is bad. We've seen psychologists, education systems pushing this idea, unfortunately, even on college and university campuses, that men are toxic. But this doesn't just start at the university level or with adults. Little boys are being taught this as well, with things such as the zero tolerance policy for squirmy little boys. I have the utmost compassion. Parents get this, especially right now with kids across the nation doing school from home. We have a lot of little kids, in particular little boys, sitting in front of a screen all day at home, and that's what they're expected to do. But are they thriving? I hear from many moms who are pointing to the fact that their little boys sitting in front of these screens are truly struggling during this stay-at-home order for education for children. And that zero-tolerance policy for squirmy little boys is in fact destroying boys' future in some instances, with boys facing expulsion and being taught as if they're naughty and bad for moving or drawing a figure of a pirate, for example, with a sword, because that's toxic masculinity. You see, feminist studies say we're going to retrain all men because you could encounter a psychopath out there. But there's been this massive failure of socializing men with this new training. Men are being retrained and it's not going well. The truth of the matter is, part of masculine development is that men are driven, and Camille Paglia pointed this out, and they're constantly having to define themselves. She points to this one example that I found fascinating, the example of the Native American culture. She points out how women, let's say in cold winter times, tend to stay by the fire as the men go out and hunt and freeze through the winter, not even starting a fire because it could frighten away prey. This is a classic example of men not only proving themselves, but providing and protecting women. We've seen up until more recently in most cultures, there's been this process of coming into manhood, which we talked about on Wednesday's show. We've even talked about how psychologically there should be this development and separation of the boy from the mother so that he can continue to develop, but to develop as a separate individual from a woman, to develop to understand his masculinity and the mentorship of men, in particular the father in his life. There's been clear evidence that this increase in gender identity disorder among boys has been due to the fact that boys have not had male mentorship. They have been isolated from men. They have been isolated from good male examples. And it's become detrimental. There's this fascinating clip from Camille Paglia. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timmeray. And I'm talking about a lecture from self-proclaimed lesbian feminist Camille Paglia, who has a lot to share in her criticism of this idea of gender ideology. Listen to this clip where she talks about how in the old world, women used to be protected by men.
You know, in the old world, the pre-modern world, you know, women were protected, okay, by their fathers and their brothers and their husbands. Okay, if there was a rape occurred, okay, in a countryside in Italy, the rapist would be hunted down and would end up dead. Okay, within 200 years. That's what control things is. That men, okay, essentially, were there as the kind of built-in police force. And now in this new modern period, okay, we can expect that women should be able to take care of themselves. Okay, but to project constant, malevolent, motives, to men. I just think that this is not the way women are ever going to achieve sexual happiness.
It's so true. Not only are women not going to achieve sexual happiness, but men are confused about who they are. They don't know what to do. They're left floundering. There's a modern rejection present with two leading ideas, and they're false. One is that women should be able to take care of themselves, saying in other terms, we don't need men. And two, that men have malevolent motives. Therefore, we should do away with them. They're evil. They have bad motives for us. Why has this happened? Because we've taken away the understanding that there are any differences between the sexes. We no longer recognize that men are men and women are women. But in reality, the truth of the matter is that we know from a religious perspective, from a biblical anthropological understanding, God created us as male and female. Neuroscientists, kinesiologists, biologists, and medical doctors all agree. I could go on and add many other professions that study the human person and ways and parts of its functionality, that there are sex differences written into every dimension of the human body. We've been talking about this a lot here on Trending. Our path to happiness is not through the blurring of the sexes. And so when people are advocating and pushing for the claim that there's no difference between men and women, we have to speak up. Not using faith alone, but faith is important. Using the clear downturn that society has shown, we've blurred and tried to say that there's no difference between men and women. People are happier when the differences are clear. We'll be right back here on Trending with Timmeray to talk about why not yoga and how do we perhaps use religious appropriation to choose bits and pieces of various religions that we like without fully subscribing then to our Catholic faith.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmeray on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. I want to talk about yoga for a minute here. It's one of those topics that we wonder, why do we find yoga on examination of conscience for Catholics? What's the big deal? Some people say it's just stretching, it helps me to sweat, it keeps me healthy. trust me, I understand where you're coming from. I just want to help you understand why the church puts yoga on an examination of conscience and break down some of the concern here. I've actually done a full episode on the topic of yoga, Buddhism, and Hinduism with a woman, a Catholic convert, who was a practicing Buddhist, did yoga, and she shares in greater detail why it was problematic and breaks it down. I'll be sure to post that podcast later today. But in the meantime, let's talk about yoga. What is it? It's basically a worship service, a form of Buddhist and or Hindu prayer and worship. Even during yoga, Sanskrit chants are used, such as Om, as affirmation of the divine. And we're not talking about God, the Creator, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit. It's kind of like an amen, but to who are we amening? In Hinduism specifically, they worship all sorts of deities. So if you're practicing yoga as a Hindu, it looks a little different from yoga as a Buddhist. It ultimately has to do with connection to gods and music through names and poses. Whether you're susceptible or not to worshiping in a different religion, the question ultimately is this, and this is why it's on an examination of conscience. Why would we participate in a pagan ritual, a pagan worship service? Is it just meditation? Or is it meditation and prayer? Well, what yoga is meditation in a form of Buddhist or Hindu prayer. Stretching is great, but yoga, per the definition of what it is completely different than what we commonly think yoga is. I'm just going to break down a little bit from the Buddhist center and how this ties into yoga, because we need to understand what Buddhism is if we're to understand what yoga is. The heart of Buddhism is this idea of meditation. It's a means of transforming yourself in order to develop various qualities of awareness, such as kindness and wisdom. That sounds great. We do want a sense of self-awareness. Meditation is excellent, but what are we meditating on? Meditation is supposed to orient us toward God, not just ourselves. Any sense of meditation of self-awareness is self-awareness as a creature before the Creator of the Heavenly Father. So that's why Buddhism becomes problematic, because it's a meditation focused on yourself. Even if it does have this goal of creating kindness and wisdom, it's about you, not about others and God. Even this idea of karma is this idea that we should do good so that good comes back to us, not because we value other people. Now, this whole path of Buddhism has a path which has the ultimate goal of culminating in, for example, enlightenment, also known as Buddhahood, or we could talk about it as nirvana. What is that? Well, this sense of enlightenment is you become your own God. That's the Buddhist version of heaven. You become your own God, but ultimately, what is it? It's nothingness. It's a state of utter nothingness. That's your goal. Now, if you get it wrong in this lifetime, the idea of Buddhism would be that you would be reincarnated so that you can do it again and again and again until you reach the state of nothingness. Let's talk about nirvana for a second, though. There's no sense of transcendence. There's no sense of union with God or others. It's just the idea that there's nothing. There's no sense of self. There's no suffering, there's no desire. There's a sense of absolute nothingness. And when you finally reach nirvana, the idea is that you're released from the effects of karma and that cycle of death and rebirth that we talked about, which is discussed as reincarnation. So if the goal in Buddhism is nothingness, why be good? This is radically different from our Catholic faith. So although these ideas of kindness and wisdom all sound real nice, it's not exactly what we're looking for. I'm going to give you an example, though, of why people in part like these self-realization elements of Buddhism. I remember some years ago, a friend of mine kept asking me to go and take these yoga classes with her. After a number of difficult things in her own life, She really got into yoga. It was something she did every day. She centered her day around it. She got her in shape, more flexible than ever before, was keeping her healthier, keeping her from getting sick because she was sweating and staying physically active. Really didn't want to go, and finally went, okay, I'll go. Because I didn't really fully understand why the church was objecting to yoga, and my attitude was probably like yours. I can go, but it's not going to have any attitude or impact, should I say, on my religion. I still love my Catholic faith. I love God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And I'm not going to suddenly become a Buddhist, so I can go. I didn't understand I was literally participating in a pagan worship service. And I just explained all of that to you. But here's where I want you to understand, people really do love some of the ideas of the state of self-awareness, meditation, because we don't pull back and meditate. Even Catholics, we struggle to reach that prayer of meditation. Most forms of your five steps to become successful in life include some form of meditation. Because we do need that sense of self-awareness, but before God. Now, here's what will happen. I've been to one of those classes I was talking about earlier, and the teacher started by saying, hey, offer this class for a friend, a family member, for a specific intention. Heck, offer it for yourself if that's what you need. Offer up this class. So it gave this sense of self-sacrifice in the class that people really liked. And then at the beginning of the class, I remember they had us laying down and putting our hands, palms down, and they were saying, just push into the earth and the ground any of those negative emotions, just push it. It was almost like this sense of suppression, or just like pushing it into the ground rather than going, you know what, God, I give this to you. I fully abandon myself into you. No, it was kind of this weird sense of letting go, but not in the right way. And you might even notice this with people who are like really into yoga. They tend to be very angry people. I'm just saying. I'm getting myself in trouble here. I know. But it is something that is common. This deep self-awareness, you can go so far and keep looking internally, internally, and internally. But at a certain point, this is why the anger enters in. You can only look internally so much without needing to offer up our brokenness before God. We can only look inside so much without needing that sense of forgiveness from our Heavenly Father. Needing that sense of reunion with Him when we've fallen so far away from the mark at times. Some of the other elements that you'll hear in a class, we'll talk about some of these qualities of awareness, kindness, wisdom, do good to others so that it'll come back to you, karma. But that's not at the heart of Christianity, which is sacrificial love for the sake of another, not karma, where it's all about what I get back. See, this is radically opposed to our Christian faith. We're looking for the state of nirvana, of nothingness in Buddhism. Well, in Catholicism, we're working toward union with God. The sacraments that are given to us in Catholicism actually have substance and effect what they symbolize. We're physically united with the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. We're brought back into communion with the body of Christ, and we're separated from Him through our own brokenness and sin. We are actually able to enter into deeper relationships with the people we know and love through the sacraments, through this sacrificial love that Christ offers to us as a model. How does this relate to the topic of religious appropriation? If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timmery. We hear all the time about cultural appropriation. All the time I hear that and I think, what about religious appropriation? Because I feel like we kind of do this a lot in society. Both as Catholics, but even people of other faith. We choose bits and pieces of various religions that we like without fully subscribing to it, or perhaps without fully subscribing to our own Catholic faith. Really, it's an attitude of relativism. That's that attitude of you do you, anything goes. There's no such thing as truth. Your truth, your truth. My truth, my truth. Religion doesn't matter. And in fact, it's so tolerant with this idea of relativism that we say you do you until someone actually wants to live in a particular way and wants that to influence them and possibly even others, like Catholicism. Ultimately, this attitude of relativism ends up drawing the conclusion that God doesn't matter, and you're offensive if you try to say that he does, if you try to force your ideas of religion on me. There's a real problem with religious appropriation. We all tend to do it at times, even by just not even fully knowing what our own faith teaches. It leaves us spiritually vulnerable. We choose those bits and pieces of Christianity to follow, perhaps elements of self-realization from Buddhism. But we don't really affect a full transformation or even a sense of development in character because we're not staying focused. We're not fully clinging to our Catholic faith. This is where the sacraments and the virtues are so important in Christianity. Why is it that we subscribe to so many self-realization methods and tips for becoming a better version of ourselves with those five tips or one key idea, but we don't actually take the time to truly know our faith? We fall into relativism and determine that we will believe whatever we want rather than living a Catholic lifestyle. We need to make that aim, that goal, for each of ourselves to actually live an authentically Catholic lifestyle. Catholicism isn't just your religion. It's not just what you do on Sunday. It's not just when you throw up a Hail Mary because you're a little worried about something. Catholicism should encompass all of your life, every aspect of who you are and what you do. We often talk about how we should pray at all times, pray without ceasing, right? What does that mean? That means to work toward conformity with Christ. This is what our baptism means. Baptism has to do with becoming little Christ, being born again into this new life, this life in union with God. This is why I want to unpack coming up here in just a few minutes some of those incredible Catholic virtues. We're going to walk through the four cardinal virtues of our faith, and we'll even walk through some of the capital virtues, why they're so important, what they are, and how they can help us counter so many of those things that we struggle with day to day in our interpersonal lives, in our struggle to grow in our spirituality, and also to help us understand why perhaps we're subscribing to other parts of religion because we're not fully understanding what our Catholic faith is offering us. We'll be right back here on Trending with Timmery.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Heading into the weekend here, if there's a topic, an important question you would like to hear discussed on Trending, perhaps an article you read, or just one of those arguments that you keep getting hung up on, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. You can head over to relevantradio.com/trending, where you can connect to me on social media by just looking at that right-hand side of the page where my Instagram and Twitter are there available for you to reach out. You can also subscribe to Trending so that you don't have to miss a single episode. Let's talk about virtue. I mentioned earlier that we tend to have this attitude of religious appropriation. We only subscribe to parts of our Catholic faith, or we're subscribing to other parts of other religions and not really getting the full benefit of our Catholicism. And I truly believe one of the greatest elements of our Catholic faith, apart from the sacraments, that we tend to really miss out on are the virtues. So let's talk about the four cardinal virtues, and then we'll unpack a few of those capital virtues today as well. So the cardinal virtues, there are four of them. They're prudence, temperance, justice, and fortitude. Now, these four cardinal virtues, they're called the cardinal virtues because cardinal comes from a word meaning hinge or door, because they're key to the moral life. Thomas Aquinas talks about how these four cardinal virtues control our appetites. Think of our appetites as our desires. You see, in order for us to be virtuous, that means that we shouldn't only be capable of doing what is good and right, but we actually have to do it. We have to move our will, even battling those disordered desires that we all have. So let's start with prudence, because prudence is really viewed as the key cardinal virtue from which all the other cardinal virtues flow from. So prudence is this ability to have a reason with regard to your moral life. So it's to be reasonable. It's to have this sense of rational consideration. So think about that, to have rational consideration. Prudence is to have rational consideration, to consider what is happening to me, what I am feeling, what I am desiring, what is happening around me. I need to consider and ponder it by the virtue of prudence. That means that we're not arbitrarily driven by various emotions and movements and actions around us. So often I think we live in such a busy world that we're all running on autopilot. And we do not make time for prudence. We never just stop and think about what's happening. A number of years ago, when I was starting college, I hit this point where I just felt like there was too much noise around me. Everything was so noisy and constant. And one of the things that I started doing is I started driving without any music, any talk show, any podcast, any audiobook. I started driving in complete silence. What I realized is it allowed me to start to kind of think through what I just did, who I just saw, how those conversations went, who I'm going to see a little later on, the things I have to do, what I'm studying, the lecture I heard. And my mind started having time to rest, to recover, and review things. I believe in a sense this was the virtue of prudence, being allowed to start to work only because there was a little bit of silence in my life now that allowed for that consideration, that pondering. And it's funny because then what I started to do is I started to leave the radio, the music, the talk shows, everything off when other people would be in the car with me. And it was always fascinating because people would feel really uncomfortable with the silence at first. Now most of my friends and family know that that's what it's going to be in the car, and they tend to enjoy the conversation, appreciate the absolute silence that occurs, because all of us are so hungry for this ability or this space to even consider life. That's so rarely done anymore. Temperance is another one of the cardinal virtues that actually flows from prudence. Temperance really has to do with ourself and controlling our passions. So tie this back to prudence. We have to first consider things with prudence, and then temperance helps us to control those passions that we have, whether for good or for bad. We are moderating our behavior and what we do. So temperance, in a sense, could be thought of as self-moderation. And then the next of the cardinal virtues that flows from prudence is justice. Justice ultimately has to do with others and giving others their proper due. It could have to do with us as well, making sure that we're just toward ourselves. Not that other people are just towards us, but that we're just toward ourselves and others. Recognize that, because we live in a culture where we talk about the injustice of it. We talk about the importance of justice, and we're usually talking about justice in terms of what we think we deserve and what is right. But the cardinal virtue to grow in that moral life, the true definition of justice as a virtue, is giving unto others what is due to them. And that's a really important definition of justice, because that will actually help you to define what you fight for. We can fight for just movements, but are we really fighting for just movements? Or are we fighting for things that we're triggered by that upset us that we think that we deserve? And then that last of the cardinal virtues is fortitude. Again, fortitude flows from prudence. Prudence being this rational consideration, that time to ponder. Fortitude is taking a stand, even against our own passions. But even taking a stand in the face of death. Fortitude we could understand as courage. Now, courage is acting in the face of fear. The fear doesn't go away. But fortitude goes even further than courage. Fortitude is acting in the face of fear, even to the point of death. If death is imminent, it's in our face. We're willing to take a stand, whether that's against ourselves or against others, if necessary. We're willing to do what is right and true and good. These four cardinal virtues, again, all flow from the first one being prudence. We won't be able to develop or grow in the virtues of temperance, justice, and fortitude if we don't first take those moments to ponder. Add more quiet moments to our lives so that we can grow in a life of virtue. Now, there are seven capital virtues. I'm going to name them very quickly and name their opposing capital sin, also known as the deadly sins. But I'm only going to walk through a couple of them. So the virtue would be chastity, and its opposing deadly sin would be lust. Another one would be generosity. The deadly sin in opposition would be greed. Temperance, which we just talked about, is also here on the list of capital virtues, and its opposition would be gluttony. Brotherly love, the opposite would be envy. Meekness, its opposite would be anger and wrath. Humility, the opposite of humility, would be pride. Diligence, the opposite in its deadly sin, would be sloth. I'd like to talk here about meekness and diligence very briefly. Meekness is one of those words I think we just don't understand. We hear examples of how St. Joseph was meek, or Moses was a very meek person. Now, I mentioned a moment ago that although meekness is the virtue, the opposing deadly sin would be anger, or let's say wrath, for example. But you see, true meekness is part of the virtue of temperance that we were talking about earlier. That self-moderation, that sense of self-control. This is why it opposes the deadly sin of anger. Father John Hardin defined meekness in this way. He referred to it as the virtue that moderates anger and its disorderly effects. It is a form of temperance that controls every inordinate movement of resentment at another person's character or behavior. Let's take that part again for a second. So meekness helps us to control those inordinate movements of resentment. Yesterday on Trending, we had a specialist here who was a specialist working in addiction and various issues, and we talked a lot about marital struggles and this kind of attitude that we can have with a marriage of resentment of our spouse or nitpicking. And I think that meekness is really that virtue that is so necessary to help counter that, especially within marriage. It helps us to control those disordered movements that continue to fuel resentment, especially with regard to our opinion and our thoughts of other people and their behavior. Meekness is possible. Know this, St. Francis of de Sales, he's a saint known for his mildness, patience, meekness, and gentleness. But did you know that he had a temper that was on fire and was easily provoked to anger? If St. Francis de Sales, who was easily provoked to anger and had that fiery temper, could become a saint and develop gentleness, mildness, patience, and kindness, and meekness, so can you and I. And that other virtue I want to talk about briefly is diligence. Its opposite deadly sin would be sloth. Diligence, continuing to be diligent in doing what is good, to not give up, to fight the fight, to finish the race, as St. Paul tells us. Diligence is what we need to continue to fight, to do good, and to develop good within us, to develop good thoughts, good attitudes, good behaviors, good habits. Don't fall into that laziness of slothfulness. Don't fall into acedia, which is that spiritual laziness that we talked about yesterday here on Trending. Fight that fight for good within yourself and to find joy within your relationships and with other people.